Right. Okay. Well, I'm not in my office today. I'm on the road and I've joined Andy Stewart, designer and brand expert, in his office on a Leadership Lounge special. So it's kind of an acoustic set here with Andy. Just me and Andy and a couple of microphones and cameras. So Andy, thank you for inviting me, letting me come into your office and welcome to the Leadership Lounge.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to have you. Pleasure to have you.
Yeah. And so for those who don't know Andy, he's the brainchild behind some of the branding for a number of organisations. You kind of raised your eyebrow there, Andy, at being a brainchild. But organisations like Innocent, the drinks company, I know you've done branding for. You're a writer, you're a designer, you're a creative, who I just love chatting with. I mean, we were just before this, when went to recording, we were chatting away. We said we should have been recording what we were just chatting about. Because Andy's got rich thinking. I love chatting to you, Andy. Particularly around this concept around brand, process, change, transformation. It's just something you're passionate about, and I love kind of chatting to you. So tell us a little bit about what you do. I've said you're a brainchild of branding, but what does that kind of involve?
Well, as you said, I'm a writer and designer by trade, and I can't believe it, but it's been 3 decades I've been doing this. So that's quite a while. So in that time, I've worked for... Well, I've done a bit of work for you, actually, haven't I?
Yeah.
But I've worked for government agencies, I've worked for financial services, I've worked for private banks, charities, artists and authors. So really a huge spectrum of individuals. And I think that you could probably sum that up, you know, what I do. Well, I help people package and present themselves in digital and print. And we're all familiar with that, I think. You know, it's things that we read, the things that we look at. So digital campaigns... and design for print. So yeah, that's kept me out of mischief this past, well, almost out of mischief for the last 3 decades.
Yeah, yeah. And as you say, we've experienced it firsthand at Everyday Leader. When we set up, you not only helped us design the look, but actually really understand kind of the identity of what Everyday Leader was going to be about.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah.
And lovely, even in that conversation, we've now been placed alongside government agencies and Innocent drinks. You know, we're on that kind of rank, so that's great. So for me, you know, brand has the concept of identity that sits right at the heart of it. And quite simply, who I am, what purpose I serve, what need will I meet, for me is really important. And so I'm not here to chat to you today about colours and logos and colour palettes and
all that sort
of thing. Yeah. I really wanted to explore this concept of identity. I want to delve deeper into it because I've been struck recently as I've worked with people in coaching, and what struck me is where people have kind of got lost in their leadership or lost as an organisation is where they've lost this sense of their purpose, or they can't put words to it, or they're not clear on what their values are. And when we explore that and really get to the root of, so this is my purpose and these are the values I stand for and these are the strengths that I have, once they discover that, you know, their identity comes alive. There becomes a passion and a purpose that strives. You know, I've read a couple of Seth Godin books recently that really kind of helped me understand that actually companies also struggle with that. It isn't just about individuals. And so I thought, just to explore with you, you know, what sits at the core of branding for companies, our own brand, if you like, is this sense of identity. So, I wonder if we just start with, you know, how important is it for a leader to kind of understand and know their identity? How important do you see it?
I think it's critical, you know. I think, you know, there's 2 words there that really stand out to me, and that's leader and identity. And I think, you know, take that one word, leader. You know, a great leader gives something to people worth following, you know. And I think that, you know, that might be a mission, but it's a clear vision and ambition in the main. So I think, you know, leaders, we all know leaders have a responsibility and an authority over people. And if you're leading people, they'll be following you, not necessarily because of what you believe, but how you act, how you behave, and the things that you do. So it's actions and behavior, I think, in the main. And that's going to be things like courage or integrity. You know, these are the things, the values that we really, we look for in people. So, yeah, leadership. if you're in a position of responsibility, people will be looking to you for guidance, for insights, to make the right decisions when faced with challenges at a micro level and a macro level as well, I think. So yeah, identity for sure plays a very big role in that. Mm.
And it's just interesting hearing you say that. And, you know, this, I was thinking on the way over here about what I call identity dissonance. This sense that if what we're talking about doesn't match how we behave, that the values that lead to our behaviours aren't aligned with who we say we are and what we're talking about, the purpose of our organisation or of us as an individual. If the behaviours and values that they're seeing don't match the identity that supposedly we're meant to stand for.
Well, that's huge.
This dissonance.
It is, and it's huge. And people pick it up. You know, people do. They pick up the bluff or the rhetoric super fast. You know, it's the classic rapper and experience. So the rapper might state one thing, but it's the experience of, of eating the bar of chocolate. Is that experience, does it match the statement of intent or the values? And if it doesn't, well, you're misrepresenting who you are and what you do. But you're also perhaps not being as effective as you could be or wish to be. So, yeah.
And I guess if it's a chocolate bar, pretty soon the sales will drop.
Well, it will.
If you're saying this is a marvellous, chocolate.
Well, that's right. or you change your wrapper. Mm. So, the experience needs to match, what's being presented and projected. Mm. You know, you as an everyday leader provides kind of coaching and insights to help people lead themselves better and lead their organisations and the people around them. Well, if you didn't do that, your business would soon kind of hit the buffers, wouldn't it? So I think, there's a certain truth and integrity behind any statement of intent or what you do or what you hope to achieve on behalf of others.
Mm. Yeah. So there's a sense for us as leaders and our identity that it has to be integrity in it, in our identity. It has to be really who we are. So what for you makes up a person's identity? It's quite a big question, that, really, isn't it?
Well, it is. I think that, there's two sides to this. What are our identity personally, or our identity that we tend to bring to the places we find ourselves?
Mm.
It might be the sports field or the place of work, but I think identity is something, it's how you think about yourself when you're by yourself. So that's one aspect. That's one way of considering your identity.
So it's how you think about yourself when you're by yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a meme or a thing over your desk, isn't it?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so, yeah. It's also something that's practical. It's something that you take from your inner world to your outer world. It's something that you demonstrate when you're part of the environment that you move in and work. Your work environment. So you're kind of taking your internal world to your external world. And I think it's how you play it out. It's how you negotiate with other people. And what I mean by that is it's how you interact, with trust. Or the hope is it's trust, integrity, humility, less conceit and bitterness. And I think that would be part of that. But I think it's much bigger than that. I think when you start to really sort of lift the lid on that, it's, your identity is your passions, your fears, your likes, your dislikes. It's your hopes, really. It's the hope. It's what you hope to bring, the better version of yourself. That's the hope anyway. But I think a person's identity possibly is best expressed when you ask them, a question like, what do you really care about? It's a famous statement, isn't it? Be the change that you want to see in the world. But I do think, what do you really care about?
Mm. Yeah. I love this, what you're talking about there, is this sense of your experiences that have brought you. It's your current, it's your present, it's the things that you love, that you have a passion for. And then there is this sense of what you're hoping for. So there's this sense of past, present, future is part of that identity.
Yeah, very much so. It's kind of where you've been, where you are and where you're headed, which is more of a tactic thing, I think. But we all pick up the stories that surround us. And I think we're greatly influenced by the people that we work with, or the partners that we choose to be with, or the things that we expose ourselves to. These are all visual narratives, and the hope is that we inculcate, we absorb the good stories, which determine and shape us as individuals, our behaviour. If we see something of quality or something that we that we think, do you know what, that's valuable.
Mm.
Then the hope is that we try and replicate that or contextualize that and reapply that.
Mm.
Yeah.
So that, it's interesting you say that word narrative and that story. And I think, you know, for me, what I've discovered is the importance of your story in that, you know, that it is that past, present, future, mm-hmm. isn't it? And you've talked about what you've gathered along the way feeds into that. So if I think about my story, you know, we it's on now, I've put it on the website, you know, I'm the son of a farmhand. Mm. So my dad didn't own the farm. He just drove a tractor. We were not well off at all. In fact, dad's belt was bale twine when he went to work. You know, we were poor, as the as the phrase goes. But that, what I learned from that was the importance of hard work, the importance of just being yourself, the importance of having, yes, working hard to work towards something. Mm. And so that's part of my story. You know, and there was a phrase that in my childhood was used by my grandparents and, you know, and my mum as well, which was like, we don't mind what you do as long as you do your best. Yeah. Which was a good mantra. I often joke about, well, I'm sure if I went back and told them I was, you know, a slightly dodgy person, but I'm doing my best at it, they probably wouldn't have been so chuffed. So I did take the ethos of that. But that was a key part of my story, you know, and then I went into education. That's part of my story. I became a head teacher.
Mm.
The ending of being a head teacher after 17 years when an Ofsted didn't go quite so well when it should have done, you know, was not the story I wanted to write, but it was a story that happened. Mm. But interestingly, you know, as we were chatting about beforehand, it's enabled me to work that into the work that I do now in developing and supporting leaders.
Yeah.
And so that sense of, just as you've described, what have you been through?
Mm.
The people that you meet, you know, I bumped into some people on the way, friends, influential thinkers that you've had conversations with that help shape who you are. And like, even we mentioned earlier, the conversation when we started Everyday Leader and I came to you and said, look, I know we were going to do some branding. Can we accelerate that branding? Because we're starting the company earlier.
I remember.
You know, and that conversation with you helps shape both me and the company in terms of what we were going to stand for. So all of those things, that story coming together was really important. Mm. So for me, I can see that. And I love what you're talking about. It's also about what you want to aspire to, what you want to work your current experiences into for the future. So I can see the power of story. What about for you? What power does story have in identity, do you think?
That's huge. I mean, you know, the visual identity, the spoken word, they all have influences on how they shape us. But they also, I think, stories, they help us make sense of who we are, why we're here, and also what we have to offer. I mean, take, for instance, just the question that you you pitched in, which is, you know, you wanted to fast track the Everyday Leader brand. Well, it's kind of, well, what have you got to offer? You know, what's the exchange, or what's the utility or the purpose behind the ambition that you have? Mm. You know, why would anybody want to give you a moment's time, actually? You know, genuinely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it's because you have something to offer. It's something that you hope to equip them so that they can get further down the track or address some of the challenges or fears or hopes or ambitions that they have.
Mm.
So when it comes to the power of story and identity, well, you could probably go back some way, couldn't you? So before Ben was behind a camera filming something like this, we might be sat around a campfire and somebody might share a story, and it might be how well, don't eat the red berries, eat the black currants or eat the darker berries, because the red berries, they'll make you really poorly. So you'll remember that story, won't you? Or play into your future state. It might be a bit of wisdom. It might be where the water is, or actually how to make fire. Or it might be how to lead yourself better, or negotiate, or learn to take a hit, actually, and then stand back up. So I think story, the power of story is huge. And it's not just about the things we eat or the way we act or the things that we hope to present. It's just about the journey. And preferably, and this might sound a little bit singular, but being the hero in the story, because whether you like it or not, I think it was Carl Jung who said, you're in the story whether you like it or not, actually. So who's in the story? Well, you're the hero or the heroine. So play your part, and that's going to be traumatic at times. It's going to be beautiful and easy, but it's going to require you to perhaps dig deep, you know, through tough circumstances, but also celebrate. So when it comes to the power of story in our identity, I think it's about courage, adventure, rescue, actually rescuing ourselves at times. And so, yeah, I think it's an expression of that, what we believe and how we act and behave, and stories shape all of that, I think.
Yeah. It's really interesting. You're talking there in terms of story. At times it's about courage. At times it's about failure. At times it's about rescuing yourself. At times it's about other people rescuing you.
For sure.
And sometimes we can, as part of our identity, we almost want to hide from those moments. But I think there's importance in working that into our identity. I was listening to another podcast recently. A guy who runs Gymshark was telling the listeners about how he... when he first set up the website, how he hadn't quite been precise enough, and it just kind of all went a bit pear-shaped. And he didn't shy away from telling that story to others, because actually, again, it's formed part of his ongoing identity of understanding, learning from that mistake, I guess, of the importance of precision and checks and double checks and all the rest of it, and that's become part of his identity. That he's worked to improve himself. So some people really shy away from that stuff, but it's important.
Oh, I think so. And I think part of it is humility. I mean, one of the things that, you know, it's not going to always work to plan, but it's how, you know, when you deviate, you know, I think we live in a world, and I include myself very much in this, where, you know, as a brand designer, I have the control or authority over all the different visual forms of communication, the written word, the spoken word, the script, statement of intent, the vision, the mission, the ambition. And then what you do is it sort of coalesces and presents a story. And it might include video as well. But it presents a particular story. Now, that's the aspiration element. And we're not always going to hit the mark. But that's where I think... qualities of humility, which is to say, you know, we're never the finished article. There's always more to learn. There's always things to be to help shape us and improve us. So your Gymshark example is one of it's quite visible, isn't it? Because when you do go through these sort of learning mistakes, or I'd call it a mistake, process of evolution or whatever expression. When people see that, I think they know that you're not a finished article. And that's not always a bad thing, because you know, picking up on that word control, well, when things don't go as hoped or planned, sometimes you discover things of greater value, actually, you know.
Yeah, and I mean, that example, you know, from what I understand, the company's worth billions now.
Yeah, they are. Well, my 18-year-old son buys into it. So,
So there's, you know, something that's helped them form that part of their identity as an organisation, but also his as a leader within that. So it's fascinating, isn't it? Yeah. Just that when you embrace that part of your experience and your identity, you know, then that's, you know, that can really shape them.
Yeah.
So in my work as a coach, I see the importance of kind of knowing who they are, knowing and owning their story as part of that process, which we've just talked about, knowing their purpose, what really sits at the root of it. So for us, you know, as for everyday leader, you know, it's about empowering people. It's about inspiring and equipping them. And so when we understand that, then that drives everything we do. And it's really important for others to know that for themselves, knowing the values they stand for.
Yeah.
And my purpose when I coach people is to help them discover that identity and that purpose. So in your experience of just working, you know, with people in terms of brands, and I know you certainly did that for us right at the beginning, was help us discover what is our identity. What helps people discover their identity, both for them as individuals, but also perhaps as they're looking to play that out into an organisation, to develop or create an organisation as part of that?
I think reflection actually is part of it, but... I think a strong identity could be summed up by the quote. It was Mark Twain who said, the two most important days in your life, which you're familiar with, is the day you're born and the day you find out why.
Yeah.
But to get kind of practical on what that means or how can you help people discover their identity, I think reflection. I think it's about regularly asking and answering tough questions like, what do I believe, or what are my values, or what's the value I can bring to the sector or the industry that I'm focused on?
And sometimes linking to that one, it's really interesting. What do I believe? What can I bring?
Yeah.
I flip that in coaching sometimes and say, what really grates you?
Well, that's good. There's a buddy of mine who wants to write. He's a designer and he's kind of moved through the ranks, and he wants to write. Mm. He recognizes that ultimately, to capture what people think and what people believe, or what you want them to do, it's words that are tremendously powerful. Mm. You know, to put a familiar bunch of words in a particular order can be tremendously compelling. It's also very satisfying as well when you can really capture and drill down to the essence of, in the shortest possible sentence, what it is that somebody does. So he said, "Well, I want to become a writer." So it's okay, but I don't know what to write about. So find something that really annoys you. I mean, genuinely, you used the word great. Find something that you're passionate about. Find an injustice. Find something that you're passionate about, and damn well write your heart out. And write it in a way that when you read it back, it makes sense. And actually work into it and edit it, you know, edit to amplify that message.
And that's interesting, isn't it? Because that's, again, when you want to discover your purpose, find out what grates, what's the friction, and then do something about it passionately. And as you say, refine it, review it. And it's the same when we work out whatever our purpose is, whether that's through writing or whether that's, like in my case, through coaching, through training. You know, for other people, it'll be whatever their... How do they want to work that purpose out?
I think so. It means engagement. I mean, really, you know, to take the time to really think very carefully about what it is you do, why you do it, what the benefits are, its utility. And then you refine it, but you work it into a language. And certainly as a communication specialist, it all starts with words. Mm. You know, everything starts with the language, the message, the meaning. And then, of course, you look to deploy that across different channels, digital and print, and the spoken word, in a way that that people get drawn to. You know, I think, and that takes three things. I think it takes time, it takes ownership, and it takes responsibility. So, you know, in a world that, you know, we've got on-demand everything, haven't we? Mm. Food, entertainment, just so much happens instantly, almost without too much thought. Mm. Well, actually, some things take time. You know, it's like the old-fashioned apprenticeships. If you were a metal worker, it'll take 7 years. You know, 7 years to actually learn the ropes, to experience, to go wrong and then make it right, to refine a particular set of skills. So I think the ability to articulate what it is and, you know, what you do, it also helps to ask people's opinion, but not too many, because you'll get a number of opinions back. But to then to distill that down into hopefully into a language that will help you understand what you offer, and then build an identity on a powerful, strong platform. I think that's a starting point.
I think we've hit a bit of a nugget there, and I particularly, you know, you said responsibility as a key word, to take responsibility for your identity, to really want to discover it. I think quite often we just zoom straight into stuff, and we, oh yeah, I quite like this, so I'll do it. But we don't really get to the root of, you know, what our purpose is in this. And as you say, almost an apprenticeship. And I would say probably, you know, we've been running Everyday Leader now for 4 years. I think we were good then. I think we're even better now. And I think that's because we've got a clarification for us on actually that purpose. And like you were saying, doing it, refining it, reflecting on it, talking, as you say, to trusted people, getting a variation of views, to say not too many because you get hundreds of ideas, and then it can become something that actually you're not. Yeah. So it's wanting to hold and refine it to that purpose, and almost putting it through the fire. I mean, it's interesting you say, like a metal worker, you put stuff in the furnace, you test it. It burns off the impurities to then make stronger steel.
Well, you
trial
it, you push it out into the world. You see what works and what needs to change and modify. Mm. And that's important. That's important. I mean, what I do now is really quite different to what I started out doing. Mm. You know, I tend to think of myself originally as somebody who'd put a window display together. It was certainly looked nice, but I'm not too sure what was on the stage, you know, or the constituent parts. But I think the more that I've kind of dug into the things that I do, I think you've got to be super fast with a message, particularly today, you know, to stop the scroll on social. You've got to be singular in the message and understand your audience. I know we're going to come onto that perhaps, but to understand not just what you have to offer the world, but also understand, well, where are the people who are going to benefit from the things that I do? You know, is that a targeted campaign? Is it a personal campaign? Is it about, how do you connect and reach the people that you believe are going to benefit most from the things that you do? Whether it's making paint, writing a book, making biscuits or cakes, you know, it's understanding where your market and audience are.
Yeah, and again, another nugget from you there that you talked about when I started off, it was looked good in the window, but what's on the stage? And I think that's really important for us as leaders to be really clear on our identity, to spend time, to invest in it, to discover it. Because actually, I think there's that sense when we know our identity, we know our purpose, we know what we're here for. I think that there's an aura you give off to people then. That actually, yeah, there's some confidence in this person. They know who they are. Mm. They know who they're not. Mm. They know what they want to be involved in. They know what they're able to say no to, because actually they're clear on that. And I think that's attractive to people as well.
Well, it is, because people like working with successful people or people who are confident. Mm. You know, I think there's a contagion associated with that. Mm. I mean, one of the benefits of working in so many different sectors over the years is that there's an interplay between all of the different environments I've played within. So you catch stuff. So I remember working with BP on internal communication challenges. And I was asked to join part of their leadership team, their communication team. And you have this ability to learn from, you know, people who work in a very different sector that then plays into the private sector or the government sector or the charity sector. And so you catch things and bring them with you. So there's two things I really want to just pick up on in terms of what you do, what I do, what the guy behind the camera here does, and perhaps if you're listening, what you do as well. And one is competency and the second one is a commitment. Mm. You know, to build competency in any line of business, I think, is of great significance and importance. Because if you're not very good, if your job is hammering a nail in and you keep missing the head, then you're not going to be doing that for very long. Mm. So I think just the ability to build your competency, which takes time. You know, people want to work with people who know what they're doing. Mm. And if they're confident in doing that, then two things happen. You get paid for doing a good job. And secondly, the job that you do actually it works, you know, it does what you hoped it would do, you know, which is for you as a leadership coach, it equips people to address some of the greatest challenges that they have, which is, it might be delegation, it might be actually dealing with performance anxiety, you know, where they have to stand up in front of a bunch of people and say, you know, for these reasons, I want you to do this because I think it's going to help us as a business, or it's going to help me personally, and it'll help you, funnily enough, because you'll hit your performance review points, which is important. So I think, yeah, competency and your commitment. And part of that is a conscientious approach. My brother, he's a city lawyer, and he talks. He openly admits, you know, he's not the best lawyer in the world, but he's tremendously conscientious. Mm. You know, if he's tasked with a commitment, he will ensure that he is 100% applied to that particular task. Mm. So I think if those two things, you know, time, ownership, responsibility, but ultimately, you know, it's like if this podcast was videoed and the camera kept on sliding or the sound quality wasn't great, people wouldn't say, well, actually, they'd probably say, who did that for you? Because I don't want to use them, you know. So I think, yeah, competence and capability.
Yeah.
Which stand in the world of business, actually, you know, and identity. Well, actually, yeah, these are great values. But what about the slightly softer or gentler values? And I'll probably come onto that as well, because to cloak ourselves with an identity of competence and commitment, you know, that sounds quite formal. There's a business edge to that. Mm. And yet, you know, as a husband, a father, a brother and son, there are slightly different identity values, which I hope to present and live out. Mm. Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, gentleness, self-control and faith, you know, and these are things that we share. Mm. You know, you have a faith and so do I. Mm. And these are really important values that shape our identity. Mm. And we hope to imitate the author of those values. And I think people recognize that. Yeah. And they also value those, you know, generosity or kindness and gentleness. Yeah. I know we're kind of digressing slightly, but
that's great. It's always when we chat, Andy, it's just, we just keep going. It's fantastic. So I love what you're saying there, Andy. And as I'm hearing this, particularly as you're talking about competence in terms of your identity, it's a sense of journey. I think sometimes we can think, oh, right, yeah, I'll go to Colin, have some coaching, discover my identity with his, you know, little identity package and bosh, off I go. Mm. But there's this sense that identity takes time. There's a beautiful phrase I heard recently, which is everyone wants to be Nelson Mandela, but nobody wants the 25 years in prison. And, you know, that was really around the fact that actually sometimes our identity can come out of hardship and we discover things through hardship. But I think it also talks about, you know, identity. What we see, for example, of Nelson Mandela, this amazing leader, is we sometimes forget that was forged over some challenging times. It was forged over experiences. Yeah. It was forged over conversations. And so the importance then in terms of our identity takes time. And for us to see our identity as a journey, we'll discover a bit about it. And then it's a bit like we said before, the past, the present, the future. You know, what experiences so far has been brought to this? This is what I am at the moment, but this is where I want to go, what I want to discover. Mm. And this sense of growing those qualities that you talked about.
For sure.
Yeah, whether they're the harder ones of competence or the softer ones of love and peace and things like that and self-control and all those sorts of aspects. That
I think so.
It's ongoing, isn't it?
I think it's to remain curious, you know, curious about these things. Not, you know, you can accept an awful lot in life. You really can. And you can be, I think, a little bit lazy as well.
Yeah.
I speak, you know, for myself. I think for a number of years, I was in a safe harbor with the work I was doing and the people I was doing that for.
Yeah.
And then I went independent. You know, and that's a vulnerable and exposing place to be when you do go independent. You'll know that yourself. Yeah. You know, from the safety of, as it were, we'll touch on this later, the tribal nature or the identity of a larger organization. Mm. The moment you step out, it's like, well, okay, it's me now that people are buying into, as well as the things that I hope to, you know, provide in terms of the services I offer. Mm. So there's a vulnerability there. But I think to be curious about that, well, I'm not the first person who's ever stepped out on their own. So who else have? And you've mentioned Nelson Mandela. Well, turns out there's a whole bunch of people who have stepped out over a threshold into the new and the next. They've been fearful. So what have they done? They've dug into it more often than not. They've read things, they've watched things, they've listened to things. They've hoped to then shape perhaps their next steps based on the experiences of others and the wisdom of others as well. You know, it was, what's the quote? All the world's a stage and every man and woman has a part to play. They have their exits and their entrances and we all play many parts, you know, as a husband, father, brother and son, but also in our professional capacity as well. And so one of the things that does strike me is your identity and the values that you hold dear, assuming we all have values, it's where we spend our time, our money and our attention. How does that differ across the different activities that we do? You know, you get some people who, in a work context, are pretty hard-nosed and uncompromising. So where's the kindness and the generosity and the humility within that? Well, how about you package that up in one? Because it makes for a more straightforward life, I think, to be the same person across, you know, the different environments in which we move and work. It can be confusing, I think. For people to not recognise perhaps the values or the consistency of application. I think guys in particular, myself included, can compartmentalize who we are, you know, and I think that can be confusing. In fact, I've witnessed it firsthand as well.
Yeah, so it comes back to that thing we were talking about earlier about that identity dissonance,
right,
doesn't it?
Right, it does, absolutely.
You're one thing in one place and a different thing in another, and as you should say, it can be confusing.
Well, so which are you? You know, who are you, in fact? You know, what values are important? And much more than what values, you know, what are the things that irritate you? You know, you dive into those and hope to change that through, you know, a contribution or an application. But
So let's just kind of explore a little bit more around leadership and how they create identity of a group. So, you know, leadership's got a whole range of definitions. There's books written on it, including my own. But, you know, leaders paint a picture of the future is one. Leaders set the temperature is another. Leaders create the culture is another. So one thing that strikes me is leaders can create an identity of the group as well. So our identity can shape those around you. You know, our identity and our vision that we have shapes those around you.
Yeah.
And there is a sense then that clarity of identity and consistency of identity that we talked about can actually, you know, help to kind of shape the group that you're with as well. So what can we do then in terms of that to grow our identity, influence the group that we're with? Is there anything more on that in terms of growing our identity that shapes others?
Oh, for sure. I mean, we're a species that adopts behaviours. You know, and I think that goes back, actually, generations. It probably goes back thousands of years, which is that we tend to adopt behaviours which have good outcomes. So if you're sitting on the edge of you know, you witness an event unfolds before you and it has a good outcome, you think, well, okay, I can learn from that. If there's a bad outcome, you learn from it, you know. Yeah. So I think we witness and adopt stuff. And we are, I think we're a species who, in the main, like to be in groups. We like community and connection. And there's logic and safety in that. You know, the guy on their own tends to get chased by the lion. And so I think if you want to grow your identity, then part of that is understanding, well, where am I currently on the spectrum of identity? You know, what do I believe? What are my values? What's the culture? And you can ask yourself or ask your partner. You know, and she might say or he might say, I have no idea what you're talking about. And so you might need to kind of step them into that. But my suggestion would be build on the narrative and ask the question, what the heck are you doing today? What on earth are you doing today in support of kind of evolving and building on the narrative that you've developed thus far?
Yeah. So it's really interesting what you're saying there in terms of it's about what story do you want to tell. But you've also created this picture. Yeah, we're going to lead a group, but actually the group you have around you can equally help shape your identity because you learn from them.
For sure.
You get feedback from them, you know, and that group can be, as you say, your partner. That group can be those that you mix with as friends. That can be the organization that you're part of. That actually it can be this, you can shape the identity of those around you because your behavior can influence theirs, but equally so can theirs influence yours.
It's like, you know, top down, you know, leadership. My son's an apprentice at the moment, and so he tends to be told what to do, not necessarily what to think, but he's given activities. But of course, the you know, there's various. I'm sure there are any number of books on sort of the 360 feedback loops, which I think are of great significance and importance. You know, to modify and be open and be humble about. You know, the things that we do, the things that we say, and our behaviour. And I think it's also to remember that we are unfinished, we are work in progress, and there's a great term, an expression that I read, and it was to consider the person opposite you might know something quite important on something that might just help you down the track, and that means we've got to be quiet, which is not something I'm terribly good at. But I should be quiet more often and just listen to some of the things that the people around me say.
So it's interesting hearing that there's a sense of the importance of vulnerability as a leader then to be quiet, to reflect, to receive feedback. And it's interesting you mentioned 360. That's something, again, that we do on Everyday Leader, and incredibly powerful, but requires a vulnerability from the person that's going through it. It requires them to acknowledge first, like you say, I am not the finished article.
I think that's right.
But I want to be better.
Yeah.
And I'm prepared to be vulnerable. I'm prepared to listen to feedback that might hurt or smart a little.
Yeah.
Because it's going to point out something that I'm not doing quite so well. But if I step into that vulnerability, if I have the courage to do that, then actually I can become better. This can be part of this evolving again of my identity. I can become better. Mm. As a result of listening to those around me, as you say, stopping and listening.
So let me ask you, what sits at the very heart of that narrative? What sits at the heart of that for you? If you're going to be vulnerable, if you're going to expose yourself, if you're going to share your hopes, dreams, aspirations and fears, what for you sits at the heart of that?
Well, I think there's... In order for you to be vulnerable, there needs to be an element of safety and trust that comes linked to that.
Yeah.
And so, I guess part of that is if you're going to get that feedback to help you develop your identity, for you to become, as we see, part of this journey, you have to invest in the relationships of others and build safety and trust within that.
Yeah.
So that you know that the person you're asking for feedback that's giving you that, whether that's a formal 360 or whether that's you just chatting to a mate over a cuppa, you need to know that the heart that they're coming from is one to lift you up, to make you better, not to put you down in your place sort of thing.
And that's relational, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, less transactional. And absolutely, trust is so important. You know, it takes a long time to build trust. You edge ever so close to it. It can be broken down and destroyed in moments. And so I think trust, relational trust is very important. And so if your identity is built on authenticity, integrity and trust, then you've got to work hard on that, I think. You've got to work hard on, you know, whether it's putting guardrails around that or actually offending less easily and saying, what I'm about to say is not easy for me to say. It's going to be really hard for you to hear this. Mm. But the reason why I'm saying it is because I care about what you're doing. I care about you and I care about the outcome, actually. And whether we work together, you know, for a moment, for a brief time, or actually for the rest of your career, then if we can help one another through that, then, you know, let's do this together.
Yeah. Now, what you've just said there, Andy, for people listening to this, they need to press pause, do rewind, listen to that again, because when somebody says what you've just said to them, I'm hearing that and I'm going, well, I don't know if you really, you know, do have something to tell me here, Andy, but I want you to tell me because of the way you've just phrased that. Because all at the root of that sits, you know, sits that trust, sits that honour, sits that value. You know, there's a real sense that I feel valued and you've not even said to me yet what you want me to get better at or to work on or to wrestle with. But yeah, if anybody listens to this as a leader, think, oh, yeah, giving feedback, you know, the phrases, the tone, the core of what you've just talked about oozes value. And that, again, helps people to shape and improve their identity. So, yeah, guys, listening to this, that's gold dust. You need to pick up on it. Let's just move on in terms of identity of an organisation. Yeah. So, you know, we had some email conversation before this, and there was a phrase in your email that I loved. It said, identity is a funny word, slightly tribal, like football, supporters, or a code, and a way of looking, behaving, or operating. So tell us a little bit more about that statement.
Well, we're right in the middle. Well, I say right in the middle, towards the end of the Euros. So it was a big match last night, Italy-Spain, amazing, late night. And then tonight there's a big match as well. So I think, identity, I think, is a funny word. And it's the tribal one. I just want to kind of lift out of that. Tribal is the colour of the jersey that you pull on when you're playing, you know, playing football, or the team you support, or the paint that you put on your face. And I think tribal is also, hey, you over there, come and join us or we'll kick your ass. That's not, I think Rob Bell said that. Or tribal is, my God's better than your God. Tribal says you're different. So I think tribal at times can polarise and divide. So I'm not a huge fan of the word tribal, although it's undeniable that tribal gives us an identity, that it provides connection, that it provides a degree of unity and shared experience. So tribal, you could say, is what middle-class white Americans voted for with a middle finger back in 2016 when Trump presented or connected this mission and mandate with a discontent. Tribal, not a huge fan of that. But I do think that tribal is a shared movement and a connection. We've all been in the theatre or the football games or the rugby games or whatever, when there's this amazing energy that tribal actually fosters and generates. But I prefer the word movement. It just elevates the hope, actually. So when it comes to identity, tribal is good, but I think it needs, just be, don't be suspicious of the word tribal, but just be wary. I think it can turn into a them and us. And I think it can be divisive.
And we've got too much of that in our world, haven't we? But I suppose it's tapping into what you're talking about there, that people will identify with, you know, we use your slightly better word, a movement. And there's something in that. So is there something in there about organisational identity? If you're looking, you know, somebody listening or watching this is thinking, yeah, so how do I create the identity or how do I develop the identity of my organisation? Is there something in that about connecting as a movement?
Oh, I think so. I mean, what's the story that you're telling? You know, whether if you're making paint or if you're in the education sector, you know, what's the story that you're telling? What's the good news story? What is it? What's the suffering that you're looking to reduce in the world? You know, which sounds terribly kind of grandiose, but I do think that whatever it is that you do, you can reduce and elevate, reduce suffering and elevate hope and optimism. And that's the power of identity, I think, the story or the narrative that you hope to live out, that you express, that you demonstrate. It's beyond actually who you are. It's actually who they could become. So there's this there. I took a wedding in Helsinki. That's another podcast, a different story altogether. But I was asked to take to marry my cousin Alistair and Lily in Helsinki. I had 4 weeks' notice, and And I was advised to say no, but I said yes. Mm. You know, I'd never done it before, so it was a risky thing to do. But in that service that I took in Helsinki, I had the privilege. It was a privilege. It was an amazing thing to be able to do. And in there was this one line that I wanted to drop in, and I wasn't sure that they'd be happy if I dropped it in. So I told them, I said what I was going to do, and they said yes. And it was this one line, which is that as a husband or a wife or a partner, that they see the person that you could become much more than they just see the person you are. They see the potential. They see the things that they could perhaps nudge and shape and advise and counsel and challenge and contend with, because they see the person that you could become. And I think as an everyday leader, as somebody who coaches people, you see the person that they could become, you know. And I think that that's a tremendously responsible thing to do. Mm. It's a risky thing to do as well, because I think you've got to be realistic about it. We're not all going to be the best at what we do for a living. I'm not the best at what I do for a living. Mm. But nevertheless, I bring all I have to bear on the things that I do. I commit to it fully, to honour the ambition, to honour the person who's commissioned me, to hopefully encourage or produce a good outcome, an outcome that's hopeful.
I mean, there's a sense as a coach, we have unconditional positive regard for those that we're working with, exactly as you described there. You see the person they could become.
Yeah,
And your hope for them actually hopefully rubs off on them too, that they want to take that.
Yeah.
So there's this sense, isn't there, that story as part of your identity, we talked about it as individuals, the same as an organisation, being clear, what is your story? What is it that the difference that you'll make? And a mutual friend of ours, Dave Courtine, said to me recently when we were discussing this and in terms of as organisation, what are you trying to do? He said, what problem are you trying to solve for your market? And this simple clarity of identifying the change that you want to make is key to help people identify with you and your product. Mm. And so for you, how important is identity of the change you're trying to make? I mean, you kind of intimated that a bit when you said, you know, if you're making paint, you know, what is the difference that your paint could make, for example? So how important is that identity of the change that when you're talking to your movement, your potential movement that you're after?
Yeah, I'll pick up on paint again in a minute, but also chocolate buttons. I'll pick up, that might sound a bit out there.
Paint mixed with chocolate buttons.
No, you don't.
Our listeners are hanging there ready now.
Gosh, I think it's being clear and realistic on your ambition, first and foremost. So you've said to the world, this is what I do, this is what I hope to do for you. Mm. So join me. In fact, pay me and let's do this thing together. Mm. So you draw up a contract or you make a particular promise. You know, so much of brand is the promise, isn't it? It's the story that we buy into, you know, whether it's the watch, the car, you know, the house, the lifestyle, the holiday. It's the promise that we buy into, you know, the brand slogan of believe in better, just do it for the journey, because I'm worth it. It's all of those things that then inculcate a sense of value on that. So, yeah, it's not straightforward to answer your question. There was a lot in that. But what I would say is set a goal, something of real value, and just really drive towards that ambition and see what happens when you really commit to something.
I guess there's an important, we go back to what we said before about integrity and authenticity in that promise that you're going to make, because you're effectively saying to somebody, this is our identity as an organisation, this is the difference we could make for you.
I think so, yeah.
You've got to deliver that, haven't you?
Well, you really have, and it's the wrapper and the experience. Again, it's back to what you said at the top of our time together. But just going back onto what Dave Courtine said, so my wife's a fine artist, and what she does and what I do is markedly different. For me, the problem always comes first. You know, what is the problem I'm trying to solve as a communication specialist? Well, we're not clear on what we say. Our market aren't clear. In fact, I'm not clear. So can you sit down and help? And actually, how does that start? Well, it starts with what you and I are doing right now. In fact, what you do with probably hundreds, if not thousands of people over the time you've been doing it, which is you start a conversation, you know, and then you try and understand and distill and connect and then reduce it down. Actually, this is what I do. This is the value I bring. And then you shop front it. You know, you say, well, actually, you push it out into the world. Well, how do you do that? Well, that's another challenge, isn't it? You know, that's another challenge. You know, how do you reach an audience that may benefit, or you believe will significantly benefit from the things that you do?
Yeah.
Whether it's paint or chocolate buttons,
yeah.
or leadership coaching, or making a film, or teaching somebody how to boil an egg. You know,
it's
that sort of,
great.
So one of the things as well that I think you and I have had a conversation before around is the importance of relationship and identifying the relationship that you kind of want to have. And, there's a brilliant book that I read, Seth Godin's one, The Practice. It was superb. And there's a piece in there. He talks about this Turkish tradition called eskide ekmek, which is putting your bread on the hook. You go to a baker's, you buy a loaf of bread, and you buy another loaf that goes on the hook for someone in need, someone that might want it, someone where that bread will be important to them. Seth Godin talks about the fact that for us, it's about putting our bread on the hook. You know, what is our product? What's the thing that we bring?
It's great.
To put it on the hook as an offer for those who might want it.
Yeah.
So how important is it for us to know this, to know what we have to offer, but also to know the sort of target audience that this might be important?
Well, I think it starts out with what are you doing it for? You know, I mean, genuinely, I mentioned my wife's a fine artist. Well, she paints, and if somebody likes that painting, then they'll buy it. You know, they'll pay money and they'll hang it on their wall. That's the ambition. So understanding the reason behind what you do and why, I think. So, you know, if you've written a book and you want to be on the, you know, on the Sunday Times, you know, top 10, you know, set your ambition and be realistic. But, you know, shoot for the stars, but you might land on the moon. You know, what's the reason behind what you do? You know, the people listening to this, well, they might have hobbies and interests or passion projects and side projects, as well as the thing that they do that gets bread, milk and cheese into the fridge. So what's the reason behind what you're doing specifically? So one of the things I did in the pandemic, my commercial work dialed down. I decided to answer a singular question, which turned out, it turned into a book. And then people say, well, you know, why did you do that? And I'm still, I'm trying to answer that question. But I can answer it one of two ways, actually. The first one, why did I do it? Well, for me to understand certain things, writing helps me understand what I think and believe. You know, by writing it down, it really helps me kind of, consider deeply some of the more complex things in life. So I write for an audience of one in the main. And then if it has value and utility beyond that, well, push it out into the world and see what happens. So be curious about that. So my ambition, certainly for the, let's call it the pandemic side project, was to dig deeply into a particular subject and try and answer that fully so that it formulate, it developed me actually as an individual. But when it comes to reaching a particular audience, well, is it going to sell a million copies? Probably not. Well, did your last one? No, it didn't. And my wife reminds me of that. But you know what? It develops me. So it formulates my thinking. So I really piled into that. And I'm delighted with what I produced. And I did share it. In fact, I shared this particular book through an endorsement stage. I sent it to people in America, Shanghai, and the UK. It's a book about martial arts. It's the why, you know, why everything you know about martial arts is wrong, you know, which is a niche book. I need to write something on a subject that's more broad. But anyway, the feedback was astonishing, and it was very generous, and they didn't need to be as generous. So the bread on the hook analogy, and I like that a lot. Well, where are you casting? What fish are you after? What bait have you got? Is the right depth there? There's any number of tactics that you could adopt. Actually, don't fish there. Why? Because there's no fish in it. So, you know, the bread's great. Your hook's sharp and it's got a barb on it. Or should it be barbless? Anyway, so I think that the analogy is a good one, which is what do you offer? What's the competition like? You know, what differs from you, from the other competitors in the market? And why should anybody use you? You know, the testimonials that you have on your website or that you share on social, well, it suggests that other people will benefit from the services you offer because it's work for them. So by way of reference, you know, it's like when people work with me, well, who have you worked for, Andy? And why should I pay you to help me with my communication challenges? And I said, well, that's a great question. In fact, not many people ask that and they should ask that more, you know. I mean, admittedly, when you go and get your tyres checked, well, why should I use you to fit my tyres? It's like, well, don't go down the road. Quick fit are cheaper.
Whichever it is.
But I think it's to ask the questions, really, isn't it? And to really consider the answers. You know, who are going to benefit from the things that I do and pay me? Or if it's not transactional, who are the people who are going to benefit most from the things that I have to offer the world?
And it's really interesting, you've talked there about a different way of thinking rather than it being transactional, relational. And I know from our conversations before, that, you know, that's been quite key in the way you've helped us shape things as well. So tell us a bit more about this importance of identifying the relationship rather than the transaction.
Well, for starters, we all know we live in a transactional world. You know, it's very rare that you get something for nothing of value, or people are a little suspicious when it comes to that. So I think it's always a very good question to put to a new client that I work with, which is, look, we have an idea of what you make or the services you offer, but are you certain what your customers are receiving and buying? Now, that sounds perhaps quite straightforward, but let me give an example. So I said I was going to talk to you about chocolate buttons.
Yeah, I've been wondering if that's going to come.
So you make chocolate buttons, but that's not what people are buying. What people are buying is 5 minutes peace and quiet from the kids in the back of the car. You know, it's take what you do. You offer training, don't you? But actually, people are receiving much more than just training. They're receiving the ability to communicate to their teams with confidence, with clarity, with vision and ambition. It might also be more granular on their ability to manage their time better or to delegate better or to stand up. And I've used the word performance anxiety, which also exists in the martial art world when you have to stand up, go toe-to-toe and compete. It's an exposing and vulnerable thing, isn't it? You know, when you put yourself out there. Well, your coaching and training is designed to help buttress people in that environment and equip people in that environment safely, you know, with a guide. If you're going to do something new and go on an adventure, whether it's, you know, furthering your place in at work, actually take a guide with you. So when I talk about transaction and relational, well, it's much more about the relationship, less about what can I buy from you, but what can I achieve with you.
Yeah, absolutely. You know. If I think some of the clients that have benefited, I mean, even the word client seems quite cold when I use it, but, you know, those that we partner with, and that's where we get feedback from and say, how's it working? What do you need more of? What do you need less of? What are your current needs at the moment? Yeah. Let's see how we can support you in that. And that's where, again, I think that's where they get the most from it, when there is this sense of partnering, and it goes beyond just a, you've paid me for, you know, an hour, 2 hours of coaching. It goes beyond that, where, okay, we've done some coaching, but I've just discovered this that might be real help to you, and I'm going to send it to you, and here's a link, or here's a video, here's some further material that might help you.
It's going above and beyond. I think what you're talking about is it's where there's a care and a commitment, and I talked to it, it's conscientiousness, it's a commitment to them, actually, beyond the transaction. And I think that you know, people talk about their, you know, customer service, as we're coming out of the pandemic, you know, people get frustrated quite quickly, I think, generally. But when people hear the excuse, and sometimes it's very legitimate, which is, it's COVID. Now, just answer the phone more quickly. Or actually, just the service you're providing is just substandard.
Yeah.
Care for it, care for the person, care for the reason. You know, this comes identity and values. It's one of putting others before yourself. It's actually about caring deeply about the outcome beyond the transaction. And I think that's it. Well, yeah, take... people might know it's Ben that's behind the camera on this one. And, you know, when people commission Ben to do short films or movies, to tell stories and narratives, well, it's much more than just capturing a moment, isn't it? It's a compelling narrative that hopes to present what it is that they have to offer in the world, what we have to offer in the world, and that it has utility and purpose beyond that, to inspire or enlighten or teach and inform or change behaviours for the better. And if that does happen, then that's deeply satisfying for all parties. But also any story. I mean, this, we've talked for a long time. I think boredom is failure. Boredom is failure. So try not to bore people.
Well, what I will take from what you've just said there, Andy, is, like you mentioned Ben, it's a bit weird. We're talking about Ben and he's sitting, you know, right behind us.
He is, in one sense.
But, you know, we've worked with Ben for a number of our projects, and it has been about relationship again, where Ben's saying to us, so what is it? Oh, we could adapt this, we could bring this in, you know, and it becomes an ongoing relationship. So his identity as an organisation has been about that. It's been about relational. Our working together has been about a mutual, how can we help each other?
Yeah.
And it's the same then as people explore, so what's my identity, that importance of relationship. Actually, we talked earlier about movement, brings movements, doesn't it? It actually creates organisations that work collaboratively with one another. It becomes part of your story. It makes you all stronger as a result of that.
And I've used it before. It's a trusted relational network of highly competent people who just bring their best to the things that they do. Mm. You know, whatever it is you do, you know. And I think that there's an attraction there. When you meet people who want to do the same, who have the same approach, similar approach, you want to work with them. You want to hang out with them. You want to spend time with them. Mm. You want to encourage them as well. It's a good thing because it's a difficult world to work in, to live in. You know, there's a lot of trauma out there. There's a lot of challenge. It's not straightforward.
Yeah. And again, that's all part of our identity, part of our story, as we've said.
It is.
Now, time has flown by. I always love chatting to you, Andy. We could talk for hours, but we must stop the podcast at some point. And so we've come to the point which, you know, I always end the Leadership Lounge with, which is, what's your top tip? So if we're thinking about identity, and if our listeners are thinking about either their individual identity or their company identity, do you have a top tip for them? If they want to distill all this time down to one top thing, what would it be for you?
Yeah. Pick a nice colour.
We're back on colour palette.
Just pick a nice colour. People don't really care.
And it's orange in our case, was the nice colour.
Blue. Yeah. I think it's understanding the why behind what you do. Mm. Wrap some language around that and keep it short, because people's attention spans are diminished these days. Mm. But understand the why behind what you do. And if you can be clear on that, I think you've got a chance.
Yeah.
I think you've got a chance. Yeah. That would be my top tip.
Great. Thank you. Andy, it's been a joy chatting to you. Thank you to our listeners and watchers as well to join us on the Leadership Lounge.
Thank you.
So thank you. And it's been great just to explore identity.
Cheers. Thank you.